Podmoth.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome to BSP.
replay.
Welcome to BSP Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we're an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network.
Yes.
And this is a live episode.
Live episode. Woo! Yeah, we are coming at you from Tucson. At a convention called
TusCon. Yeah, which is a sci-fi horror fantasy convention.
Yes, exactly.
It's
so
been going on since, what do you say, 94?
Oh, well, that's cheap. I was like, since like 70s. An hour
ago?
Oh, the
70s? Oh. 48. Oh, geez. Okay.
Really?
I lied then. Yeah.
What?
Almost 50 years.
I really thought this was like the third year.
Oh, because we were talking to Joe during our dinner break, and he said he's been here since 94, I guess, with a... Oh,
wow.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
That's incredible.
So you were 40 when it first started.
I was waiting for that.
There it is. All right. So if this is, I don't know if this is y'all's first time listening to us, but
this is how it works.
So we pick a paranormal topic, and we are going to bring you some really, really fun, interesting stories about that. We kind of trade off. And then at that point, we go into our believer skeptic portion where I debunk what we talk about because I'm the skeptic, and Chris talks about why people believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to give a little bit of background about the podcast.
Yeah. Go for it.
So we've been doing this. We just started our fourth year. We're halfway through.
Fifth year.
We started our fifth year. We've been together since 2017.
So there it is.
August of 2017.
Yep.
This was a passion project of mine, and I kind of dragged Cody into it. And
he did. I don't listen to podcasts, and so Chris kept trying to get me to do one, and we kept going back and forth on it.
Yeah.
And so finally, we were like, "Well, we love paranormal stuff; it's interesting, but Chris tends to believe."
Yeah, I'm more of a spiritual person, so I have a lot of belief. Also, comes from my cultural background as well.
Yeah. And
Cody's a previous Catholic.
I'm a converted Catholic.
We have a few of those in the audience.
Yeah, and it's, you get to that point where you just start questioning things. And so I admit, like, I'm the person, like, I don't, like, just poo-poo on it. Like, I want to believe, but I'm a proof person. And I personally have never had any experiences.
Yet.
I mean, I would love to. And I had a dream last night that I had experiences. And I was like, it's finally happening! And then I woke up. And it was nothing.
So
with that, should we get into our topic this time?
Sure. So we had a miscommunication, first of all. When we were first asked to do this, Joe asked us to do this, and we were like, let's do some local stuff. And then we're like, I don't know, it just got so very confusing. And Cody thought I said horror stories, which I did, but I said local horror stories. But he just heard half of it, so now it's just horror stories.
Yeah, so since it's a sci-fi horror convention, we were like, you know what? Usually we'll focus on something fairly specific.
Yeah.
And so we've done, like, chupacabras, and we've done
possession. Monster.
And we've had some really crazy, interesting episodes.
Yeah.
But for this one, we're going general, because we thought, if it's a horror convention, why don't we try to scare each other? Like, find something that is in lore, and it's not just, and these are not just fictional stories, like, it's stuff that supposedly people believe has really happened, whether it did or not.
Yeah, and just so I forewarn everybody, I guess there's a trigger warning, content warning, there is talk of murder and attempted suicide in this podcast as well. This is a very adult podcast, not for the kids, so we will drop four-letter words here and there and everywhere, so...
And everywhere.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. So I should probably go and Do it. There we go. Calling this our campfire horror tales.
And it's very intimate, so it's apropos.
Yeah, it'll be nice. We can like gather around the campfire. And then we have a very special guest at the end who is going to be sharing some of...
A hometown or a personal story.
Yeah, local stories. Yeah. So it'll be really cool. So, all right. So with that, we move on to our next portion. And that is... choking.
Please don't.
Okay, I'm all right. I could use a drink right about
now. Oh, yeah.
Now.
This is our drink portion. So we always, in our podcast, we get a drink that goes along with our topic.
Yeah.
Do you want to go first or me?
It does not matter. I know you have two of them.
No, I got one.
I thought you said you had double thing.
Oh, no. It counts as two because it's you'll see why.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
So I've used this before in a previous episode because it's one of my favorite because I no longer drink alcohol. It's non-alcoholic. It's called Santa Claus Toller. But the reason I got it is one of my stories is about the watcher in Westfield, and he sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. So he's a watcher as well.
Well done.
And also, Christmas is coming up, so...
That is actually such a great one.
So there you go. That's why I got that.
Oh, shit. And I got to go next.
if you don't know this, Cody has a history of rationaling his drinks. I don't know if that's even a word.
I was about to say.
But he'll always pull something out of the refrigerator and be like, oh, I can rationale this drink. So here we go.
You can rationalize anything if you put your mind to it. If your heart is pure and you believe, you can rationalize anything.
Well, then go for it.
All right, so I actually did something a little different.
Need
a bottle
opener?
And, oh, yeah. Do you need one?
Yes.
There you go. So I, instead of doing something related to our topic, I found something local to the area.
Yay.
So I found what's called a Coco Pele Winery, and it's a Sweet Lucy Red. And Coco Pele Winery is in, and I looked this up, it's in Sumtown, Arizona, which is like half an hour from here?
Pierce.
Is Pierce close to here?
Pierce.
Yeah.
Yes, it's actually southeast of here.
Okay, so it's driving distance and everything.
Do you know about Coco Pele?
Yeah, hour and a half, 2 hours.
Oh, that's not so bad then. Okay. Yeah, and because I want to drink something that I like, and I like sweet, fruity wines. So you know what? Why the hell not?
Because you're fruity yourself.
Cheers to that.
Do you know the Coco Pele story?
Told it to me before.
Yeah, he's a fertility god.
Oh,
and a flutist. And my friend, who is indigenous, she'd always call him the horny flutist.
Oh, well, yeah. So then I can't wait to drink this and see where the night takes me.
Oh, great.
And I'm not sure, but I think the sound of the flute is supposed to sound like rain.
Oh, that's really? Right. He's a rain god as well. Fertility and rain.
Oh, well, that's awesome. So. I mean, it looks like he's having some fun with his flute. So while I'm
pervert.
The worst at opening this, something... I'm the worst at opening these, so do you want to? So Chris will usually go into a little bit of history about our topic before we get into our stories.
But you have no idea what I'm talking about.
I have
no idea.
I have no idea what you're going to be talking about.
Well, so I'm a big horror nerd, so I'm definitely in my comfort zone here, as you can attest to. That being said, horror is subjective, so what I find scary may not necessarily be what you find scary. But with that, I'm sure you may find some aspects of our stories horrific in their own way. So in this segment of our podcast, like he said, I usually give some kind of history or historical aspect about our topic. But since this is a live show and our first for ToothCon, I thought I would give a background into the psychology of horror and why we like horror. Maybe I'm trying to psychoanalyze myself.
Oh, cool.
You be the judge. So evolutionary psychologists suggest horror films tap into our primal fears. And even though horror movies are fake and we know that, watching them can sometimes trigger what is known as our flight or flight response. Did you actually open that?
That was the most badass I've ever done at this.
And you're so stealthy and so quiet.
So quick diversion.
Yes.
We did a live episode
Three
years ago in Phoenix, and it was so much fun. And I got this champagne. And I stood up and I pulled the cork and it literally exploded in my face, on my shirt, like in front. And we had like 40 people there that night.
It was
in front of like
alcoholic bukkake.
Yeah, it was alcohaki.
Alcoholic.
In public. Okay, continue.
Well, basically, through its unrealistic portrayals, we consume horror to prepare us for real-life horrific situations, whether consciously or subconsciously. According to Krista Jordan, PhD, a clinical psychologist in Austin, Texas, our brains can't always distinguish between fantasy and reality completely effectively, and in a sense forgets what is being consumed is not a real danger, and as a result, provides the same or similar response as if it were.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, I thought this was going to suck.
Thanks. People who say they enjoy horror are more likely to experience negative emotions or feelings during a false horror experience. It has been said that this is due to the feelings of release or relief following intense fear. Just think about like thrill seekers who get the same kind of rush from roller coasters or skydiving. You
like know? Adrenaline junkie kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. So what happens physically to our bodies when we consume horror? Our heart rate increases. A researcher states that even before a horror movie starts, heart rates elevate slightly, and when the film gets scarier or becomes more intense, heart rates can increase up to 42%. This, of course, can depend on how intense the horror is, whether you're watching it alone or with others, if it's dark outside or light, if the horror is a new or repeat viewing, and age. So, Cody.
Oh, I knew it.
As you are so old, tell us how it affects you.
Well, if I remembered, I would tell you. And we just had a newcomer join us, and I wanted to give her a quick hello. We're doing a quick, before we get into our paranormal stories about horror, our topic today is horror. We're trying to scare each other.
I think she can read the slides.
Campfire Horror Tales. She's giving a little history of horror yeah. and why people get scared.
So the increase in heart rate in turn raises blood pressure. Additionally, during such moments, the body will produce the hormone known as adrenaline. And something new I learned, which we were talking about in the car today, adrenaline is the cause of goosebumps in that the hormone stimulates the muscles which pull on the roots of the hairs around the skin. Yeah.
Shut up.
Yep.
Wow.
Additionally, yeah.
Yeah.
Additionally, a neurotransmitter in our brain called noradrenaline is also triggered, which is like adrenaline, but works even more intensely when faced with such horrific situations. After coming down from such an adrenaline rush, people often can be happy and relaxed. Along with all that, our pupils, this is interesting, pupils dilate, allowing more light to enter the eye, which allows us to see further and clearer as necessary.
Oh, so it's like evolution, because when you're scared, you need to have your reactions and all your crap.
Reactionary vision.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not your pubes, your pupils, because I misunderstood
your
you
pupils.
At first. Your pupils.
Oh, my God. This chemical plays a role in reward and how we feel pleasure, as you know, dopamine. But that's what I was talking about, the increased brain chemical called dopamine that releases after the adrenaline rush. Following a frightful experience, there's an increase of the chemical from the adrenaline rush calm down, and I already said that. When it is released, the muscles in our body are being primed for action and blood flow to the stomach. In this way, our body can focus...
To the stomach.
Stomach, yeah.
Wow.
To your, the leg, the stomach.
Yeah.
Huh.
And in this way, our body can focus on what's important and determine the appropriate fight or flight response. Besides all the physiological responses, it is safe to say that a huge reason people enjoy horror is that you're watching or reading things in a controlled environment, in that you can remove yourself from the situation at any time if you so choose. Like I said earlier, sidetrack, people always give me shit because I love horror movies, but I'm scared shitless to go to haunted or horror attractions.
And oh, I forgot about that.
That's the exact reason, is I can always stop reading a book or watching a movie, but the same can always be said when you're in an attraction, you know?
Huh.
So, exactly.
Oh, that's true. That's
absolutely.
True. Huh. Well, now I want to take you to a horror.
Hell no. Slaughterhouse? Slaughterhouse?
House.
Colton Scribner, a PhD candidate from the University of Chicago, says that in consuming horror, we are, in a sense, learning to predict the world around us better, preparing us for future horrific situations. Huh. Another theory is horror consumption can help a person build their coping strategies, in that consumers learn to deal with uncertainty, suspense, and anxiety. In a study, it was found that horror fans are more resilient and less psychologically distressed due to their coping skills, and that by mere consumption, horror consumers are essentially building a toolkit for how to deal with with feeling anxious or afraid. So it's therapy.
That's putting, like, I just watch for fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird that there's
that I'm
so
putting the psychology behind
yeah,
it.
Like, I'm so much mentally healthier because I watch Candyman.
Yeah. That's three times.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay, no more. We can say one more time. And that's all, because that's my scariest movie of all time.
There's that commercial where the kids are going, why don't we get into the running car? No, that's stupid. Why don't we go behind the chainsaw?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Like, quick, hide in the chainsaws.
No, it doesn't.
Absolutely. So for me personally, it comes down to two things. One, horror allows us to explore our dark side. Erin Hadley, PhD, a clinical psychologist in Philadelphia, theorizes that, quote, we all have unknowable parts of ourselves that I think are kind of externalized into dangers outside of us, unquote. The second reason for me is that it provides an escape, of course. I know you can say that about any genre, but with horror, even if it's just for 90 minutes, it allows me to escape and not have to think about the true horrors of the world around me for that time, you know?
Interesting.
I believe that horror allows us to fantasize that if we were in the same situation and the one we were watching or reading, we would react differently than the person in danger. We would not move into the haunted house where 1,000 people died. We would never turn our back on the killer or we would just run, you know?
Right.
And there you have it. Some of the psychology and theory as to why weirdos such as myself love horror. Cody, I know much like myself, you're a horror fan. So what are your reasons?
That is interesting. It's like a form of masochism. Is that the one where you like being tortured?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Because I love being scared in horror movies, but I always regret it after. Whenever it's a really scary one, like, because I get, it's weird because I'm the skeptic, but like when I saw Seaman, I couldn't look in a mirror for weeks. Mm-hmm. I was so ugly for those few weeks because I couldn't even look at myself.
Just for the few weeks?
Just for the few weeks. Well done. Yeah. Yeah. Because I regret it afterwards. But in the moment, when you're watching the movie and you're really scared and it's well done, like, I love that feeling.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
good.
Just because literally you're on the edge of your seat the whole time. You're like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Exactly.
Yeah.
On your wet seat from all the pee because it's so scary. Wow. So that's great.
Yeah.
I love that. So we're getting into our stories now?
Sure. So, you go first.
All right. Okay.
So your first slide.
I'm going to kick things off by talking about the... Oh, I almost hit the wrong thing. Let's try this again. I'm going to be talking about the Ghost Bus of Beijing. I think this is probably one that a lot of people have not heard about.
You have?
Oh, good.
Oh, good.
I was like, oh. I've never heard of it. So I'm taking everyone to...
Beijing, China.
Beijing, Texas. Beijing, like, China. Wait. Just kidding.
I was like, Paris, Texas.
But <is. laughs>
So we're going to Beijing, China, and I stumbled across this story. So, on the night of November 14th, 1995, in Beijing, China, so it's
fairly new,
so long ago,
30 years,
the Midnight Bus number 375 incident occurred. It's also called the Last Bus to Fragrant Hills, which sounds like a fart.
That sounds
but those
Fragrant
are
Hills.
Yeah.
I love it.
Even today, when the tragedy of bus number 375 is discussed in China, people are terrified. And the mystery around this has yet to be solved. And this is such a strange story. And the line between what really happened and what didn't is very blurry.
So we're all doing unsolved mysteries because I have two unsolved mysteries.
Oh, that's true. But this one is definitely, well, we got some paranormal stuff in here. So the bus number 375 left Yao Ming Huan's bus station on the night of November 14th, 1995. With the goal of reaching the city of Zhaoshang, which is Fragrant Hill.
Somebody's worked on his pronunciations.
Right now. I'm terrible at pronunciations. Chris, when he does Spanish especially...
I turn on a lot of gay men.
He does. They get really turned on.
Yeah.
But the bus never made it to its destination.
Oh, shit.
That night, the Beijing Evening News and the Beijing News reported on the story. Well, apparently there was an old woman and a younger man. And
which one were you?
I was the old woman. Who were the last person? They were the last people to ride that bus. So they were interviewed, and this is the story they told. They said they boarded a handful of stops before the last one.
Mm-hmm.
When they did, a young couple boarded with them. So the only people on the bus here are the four of them and the driver, and then there was a ticket taker woman,
and that's it.
So the young couple sat up front behind the driver, while the old lady and the boy sat on the other side of the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as it drove through the night, all they could hear was the drone of the engine, and it was a very, very remote area, so there was not a lot of sound or a lot of stuff going on. Well, after a while, they saw people by the side of the road waving at the bus. Mm-hmm. So the driver stopped, and when the doors opened, three people got on. There were two men who were supporting a third man between them, like holding him up.
Like Weekend at Bernie's style?
Yeah, like exactly, like holding him up. Now, the man in the middle looked disheveled, and they said his head was bowed so nobody could see his face. Now, oddly,
All three were dressed in traditional Chinese robes from the Qing dynasty, which is like centuries old.
Qing dynasty?
Qing. That's probably Q-U-I-N-G? Right. Q-I-N-G.
Yeah, Qing.
So Qing dynasty. Now, the other passengers on the bus, their report went, they were kind of nervous since they're glancing around.
Rightly
like,
so.
Yeah, this is
like they have like
really
a corpse
strange.
With them?
Something weird is going on here,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So the ticket woman was trying to calm everybody down, and she was like, you know, don't be afraid. They're just actors shooting a costume drama in the vicinity.
A likely story.
They just got drunk, you know, and they're just heading home after a long day of shooting. Now, the old woman said mm-hmm. she kept turning around and picture time and staring at the three strangers who were settled in the back. Uh-huh. And there was just an eerie silence. Well, after three or four stops, the young couple got off the bus. And at that, the bus driver and the female ticket taker were kind of like trying to be more laughing and joking, trying to calm kind of the situation down or make it seem less tense, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, suddenly the old woman jumps to her feet and she hits the young man and she starts shouting and making this huge fuss, telling everyone that he had stolen her purse.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So the young man, he stands up and starts arguing with her because he has no idea what's going on. But the woman grabs him by the collar and demands that the driver lets them off and she is going to take him to the police station. And the young man was speechless. Well, the bus pulled over because she made such a scene, and she drags the young man out, and they watched as the bus drove off into the night.
Did she, like, beat the crap out of him?
Well, at that point, she breathes a huge sigh of relief. And so the man is like, what the fuck is going on here? And the woman looks at him and says, I just saved your life.
That's like the bus to hell, basically.
Right, yeah, exactly. So he's like, so please explain this to me. Well, she said that the fight was a ruse to help get them off the bus. This is what she saw that he did not notice. She said that the three people, that their feet were not touching the ground. So when they boarded the bus, that the three people just floated down the aisle and he didn't notice it. And that is why she was like, something is going on here. So we are getting off this bus. Now, this sounds kind of woo, like, okay, that's obviously made up. But they were interviewed and said this. And the bus was never seen again. Now, 2 days later, police eventually found the bus. It was submerged in a reservoir 100 kilometers from where it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bus was hauled out, and it was identified as that bus, and five bodies were recovered.
Oh,
among them,
God.
Two crew members and three passengers. And the most astonishing thing they found was that the two bodies of the crew members were in normal condition, while the bodies of the other three passengers were horribly decomposed. And they said that they were decomposed so badly that it seems as if they had died a long time ago. So we have that going on. And then you have two other crazy-ass mysteries going on to wrap this up. Mm-hmm. One, the bus did not have enough gas to drive all the way to that reservoir. So somehow it got there. And number two, the police did an inspection of all the security cameras, like mm-hmm. in that area of the entrance leading to the reservoir,
yep.
and the bus was not visible in any of them.
Oh,
in fact, they found nothing out of the ordinary whatsoever. So they don't even know how the bus could even get to this place.
Wow.
Now that brings us to the end, because this is an unsolved mystery. We don't know truth from reality, like from fiction and what's blurred, but yep. even today, people will refuse to ride that same route in Beijing, and they still talk about that story to this day.
That's crazy. Would you ride the bus?
Hell no. Oh, during the day, I might ride it. Yeah, not at night.
No, that's like especially like 3 a.m. You know, the witching hour.
Yeah, the witch. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Oh, ooh. Right. And that's about whenever this happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that is the story of the midnight bus of Beijing.
Awesome story.
Thank you. Creepy level 1 to 10. I think that's not a bad start.
That gave me the goosebumps. So yeah.
Good.
So
just imagine people floating down the aisle here.
Don't even invoke that. Don't mess.
Oh shit. Oh, nobody looked. Nobody looked.
All right,
okay.
First
go
slide.
For it. What?
For my first slide.
Your first. Oh
yeah.
I forgot. Yeah. Let's go to your slide here.
So this is a story I have been obsessed with since I read about it a few years ago. It is similar to a story I did in a previous episode about the Circleville letters,
uh-huh.
but different enough that you will be like, WTF. If you want to hear that one, you can go to episode 95, our missing persons episode. That's where I did that one. Anyhow, If you have plans on buying a new home, you may want to reconsider after hearing this story.
Oh, I know a very little about this.
Second slide.
Second slide?
Yep. All right. On June 6, 2014, Derek and Maria Broaddus bought a home for them and their three children at 657 Boulevard in Westfield, New Jersey for around $1,356 million. According to
dollars?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's like a really nice house.
As opposed to pesos.
Well, I was expecting because it's so creepy that it was going to be like $40 house.
Cryptocurrency. Yeah. Dogecoin. Oh,
yes. Dogecoin.
According to this listing, it is a 3,869 square foot colonial style house originally built in 1905 with, get this, 7 bedrooms and 24 bathrooms.
Oh my God, what?
Yeah.
Hold on, let's do some math real quick. That's more than 3 bathrooms
per person.
Per bedroom.
Yeah. That's insane.
Like, okay, all right.
It's like the Winchester House of toilets, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine how expensive their water bill is?
Oh, my God.
Exactly. 1905? Oh, forget
this
that.
This is weird.
Yeah. So not long after the purchase, Derek had completed some new home tasks for the day and decided to check the mail. In it, there was a letter simply addressed to the new owner with no return address. The letter stated, next slide. Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. How did you end up here? Did 657 Boulevard call you to its force within? 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now and as it approaches its 110th birthday. I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s.
Watched the house?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And my father watched the house in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out. The rest of the letter gave extremely specific details as to what they drove, contractors they had seen going to and from the house, specific renovations they were working on, and so on and so on. The writer berated the Broadduses for bringing in contractors and making changes to the home. A further chilling detail in the letter talked about their children, stating, "You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think there are 3 that I have counted." He then inquired if there were more children on the way, continuing with, "Do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested? Better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family, or was it greed to bring me your children?"
Were there not enough bathrooms for your growing family?
Yes. "Once I know their names, I will call them and draw them to me."
Oh.
The letter ended with, "There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive by 657 Boulevard each day. Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Look out any of the many windows in 657 Boulevard at all the people who stroll by each day. Maybe I am one. Welcome, my friends. Welcome. Let the party begin. Signed, The Watcher."
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Derek was rightfully freaked out and called the police. When the officer read the letter, he simply replied, "What the fuck is this?"
Fair.
And inquired if Derek had any known enemies and so on. After receiving the first letter, the Broadduses sent an email to the previous owners, John and Andrea Woods, to inquire as to who the watcher may be.
Oh, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Andrea Woods responded that a few days before they had moved out, they had also received a similar letter, but stated that it was the first occurrence, so they ignored it. Basically, the letter just was thanking them for taking care of the house, you know?
Wow.
So they just threw it out. And both families went to the authorities, where they were informed by a detective that not to tell anyone else about the letters. 2 weeks passed without much incident. Then Maria stopped by the new house. She checked the mail to find a new letter. "Welcome again to your new home at 657 Boulevard. The workers have been busy, and I have been watching you unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what is in the walls yet? In time, they will."
Oh.
The letter was a little different, as it directly addressed Maria and Derek, but misspelled their last names. This letter would be even more creepy, as it listed the three children by nickname and birth order, among other very specific details.
By nickname?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to wonder if they were yelling it out, or if he bugged the house.
Yeah. Well, one detail I left out that wasn't there, he saw one of the little girls painting on her easel on the porch, and he mentions it in the letter.
Oh, yeah. God.
657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all the secret it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement? Or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. It is far away from the rest of the house. If you are upstairs, you would never hear them scream. Will they sleep in the attic? Or will you all sleep on the second floor? Who has the bedroom facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better. All of the windows and doors in 657 Boulevard allow me to watch you and track you as you move through the house. Who am I?
God.
I am the watcher and have been in control of 657 Boulevard for the better of 2 decades now. The Woods family turned it over to you. It was their time to move on and kindly sold it when I asked them to. I pass by by many times a day. 657 Boulevard is my job, my life, my obsession. And now you are too, Broadus family. Welcome to the product of your greed. Greed is what brought the past 3 families to 657 Boulevard, and now it has brought you to me. Have a happy moving in day. You know I will be watching.
Okay, so they said that they're the reason the other family moved.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm assuming they're going to go back to the other family and be like, what the fuck?
We'll get there.
Okay. Just making sure.
It was then that they decided that the kids would no longer come to the house and undecided if or when they would actually move in.
And they just dropped $1 million on this house.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's worse.
Just wait. No.
It would be a few weeks before the next letter would arrive. The letter said, where have you gone to? 657 Boulevard is missing you. So who is the watcher? The letters had been processed locally, but interestingly enough, the date of the first letter was postmarked before the sale of the house went public, and the previous owners had never put up a sale sign. Renovations were mostly interior, so that wouldn't be noticeable. Derek spoke to a neighbor who spoke about another neighborhood family, the Langfords, that seemed a bit odd but totally harmless. It was a family with a 90-year-old matriarch and her children in their 60s that lived with her. And one of the residents was known to generally creep out the neighborhood by walking in yards and at times staring in windows. Based on that information and proximity of the neighbors, Derek thought the watcher might be this man. They informed the detective of their suspicions, and the detective had stated that they had interviewed a family member, which was inconclusive. After a few weeks, authorities stated there's nothing else they could do at this point. The Broadduses began their own investigation, setting up cameras, among other things, to determine who could be watching the house.
Good.
They also looked to other experts, such as a private investigator and even a former FBI agent that they happened to know. The letters were analyzed, but not much could be found. It was thought that the watcher was not likely to act on their threats, but the letters were still strange enough to cause concern.
Yeah, right. Because you're like, if like you would think maybe it's just a prank.
Yeah.
But they've had to watch and stalk them to do this prank. So that is a lot of research in this prank. Yeah.
This guy is completely invested in this family.
Yeah.
The watcher seemed to hate the renovation, stating in one letter, the house is crying from all the pain it is going through. You have changed it and made it so fancy. You are stealing its history. It cries for the past and what used to be in there in the time when I roamed its halls. The 1960s were a good time for 657 Boulevard when I ran from room to room imagining the life and the rich occupants there. The house was full of life and young blood. Then I got old and so did my father. But he kept watching until the day he died. And now I watch and wait for the day when the young blood will be mine again. The Langfords were still thought to be involved. The police urged the Broadduses to send a letter to the family informing them that they were going to tear down the house, hoping to get a response. Nothing happened. The Langfords accused the police of harassing their family. Anyone or anything strange in the neighborhood became suspect. Despite that, everything was becoming inconclusive. Either way, the Broadduses were more unsure than ever about moving into the house.
What do you mean?
Yep. Derek and Maria were now having psychological effects from all the stress and trauma. So 6 months after the first letter arrived, they decided to sell the house.
God.
They asked for more than they paid based on the renovations they had completed. Unfortunately, news of the watcher had traveled quickly and offers fell through.
No.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Not too long after that, the Broadduses attempted to sue the previous owners for not disclosing the letter they received from the watcher.
Oh,
this
okay.
suit was quickly dismissed.
Yeah, because...
Yeah.
And if in fact it was just one letter.
Yeah. Neighbors began to speculate that maybe the Broaddus's themselves were writing the letter to somehow get out of the house, either financially or otherwise, which they flat out denied.
Because they could have just renovated it and sold it for all the money. they're lowering the value of their own house,
yeah, they could have flipped the house. The Broaddus's hung on to the house, and in 2016, they had planned to tear down the house and redevelop it. The plans were not approved by the planning committee, which upset the family, but luckily not long after, they found someone to rent the home. The renter stated he wasn't worried about the watcher. That being said, there was a clause in the lease letting them out if another letter was received.
Oh.
It was. This one being the most threatening. It was addressed to the vile and spiteful Derek and his wench of a wife, Maria, regarding their attempts to tear down the house. It stated, 657 Boulevard survived your attempted assault and stood strong with its army of supporters barricading its gates. My soldiers of the Boulevard followed my orders to a T. They carried out their mission and saved the soul of 657 Boulevard with my orders. All hail the Watcher. It also indicated a threat should they make any other attempts, stating maybe a car accident, maybe a fire, maybe something as simple as a mild illness that never seems to go away but makes you feel sick day after day after day after day. Maybe the mysterious death of a pet. Loved ones suddenly die. Planes and cars and bicycles crash. Bones break. Despite the threats, there wasn't very much for authorities to go on. The same letter said, "You wonder who the watcher is? Turn around, idiots. Maybe you even spoke to me, one of the so-called neighbors who have no idea who the watcher could be. Or maybe you do know and you're too scared to tell anyone. Good move." Regarding the house, the Broaddus's eventually sold it in 2019 for $959,000.
So they renovated it and then still sold it for less money.
Way below the asking price.
Fuck. And that's why my skeptic is the buyer did all this so he could buy the house cheaper and be like, haha, gotcha. Got a cheap house.
And to date, the mystery of who the watcher is has yet to be solved, although this case is only about 7 years old, so something still may come from it. This insane story has been bought by Netflix and as of last month has started production and will star Naomi Watts and Bobby Cannavale.
Wow.
And there you have it. The strange and mysterious case of the Westfield Watcher.
Damn.
Any indication that the new owners received
that letter? Yeah, good question.
They haven't said anything, so who knows?
So was this really just all about either it's something personal or the fact that they were the ones who decided to renovate the house?
Yeah, it sounds like a vendetta of some sort, you know?
That's wild. Isn't it? And I wonder how well-known they make records about doing a teardown.
Yeah.
Because he knew about it.
Yep.
And if it was anything that affected like the structural integrity of the place, load-bearing walls and stuff, they would have to get some sort of a inspection.
And are those records publicly available? And I'm sure that this obsessed.
About the watcher letters, that's important too.
Yeah, who's the one that told?
Unless they're stupid, they didn't do that. They were told don't do it, and it was a smart thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Somehow that is
creepy. Wow. That's unbelievable.
Now you know why I've been obsessed with this story for so long. And I've never been able to fit it into any of our topics, but this was the one.
Chris, be honest.
Yeah.
Is it you?
I am the watcher. I am the watcher in the walls.
I knew it. I always said that Chris has someone hidden in his panic room. A dead body.
Yes. I do live near South Mountain, so, you know, there's that.
Okay, are we doing a raffle?
Let's do it for one of them.
So we have these two gift bags.
So there is a number on your seat or near you.
How are we going to? Oh, God. We're going to have to pick 1,000. Only get orange. Only get
pink.
Pink or is yours orange or pink?
Orange.
Let's give her a pink one. So let's only do pink.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then the first one is 140.
All right.
136.
We didn't. Oh. Said 136?
136 or 140? 161.
Oh, 140.
140? Hey!
All right.
All right. So you get to take your pick. The only difference is the wine. So we have Phantom in one and 19 Crimes in the other.
See, they're paranormal yeah. related.
Yeah,
Phantom
exactly.
And crime.
He it definitely is. Committed the Watcher 19 crimes at least.
Yeah. Thank you.
What?
Bottle opener?
Oh, yeah. If you want to open it now.
Oh, my. No, my. You nerd, I have more.
Are you doing another more one?
They're non-alcoholic,
you're such a
dude.
Drug. You're going to be so wasted.
Shwasted.
So shwasted.
Chocolate wasted, you know, like that movie. Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. So.
Your second story.
Number two.
You're flushed. Are you drunk?
This is so good. It's sweet. It's candy.
Cody loves candy wine. It's always sweet.
Candy wine.
Right? Yeah. Like he doesn't even care about the alcohol as long as it tastes like candy.
Yeah. Like I could do a non-alcoholic sweet candy wine, but no, I haven't. I've had just that much.
Oh, okay.
And then you're beers. Fine. And then beers before. All right, here we go.
You're in stumbling distance of your bed. You're fine.
So we're going to be talking about the Ammons family.
The Adams family?
But A-M-M-O-N-S.
Oh, you changed the slide.
Oh, let me change the slide.
Because this is a surprise slide, too. You told me.
Yeah, we're going to make it there. That's it.
No, it's
not. This is the introduction to it.
Okay.
All right. It's a tale that started with...
As old as time?
As old as Chris. It is a tale that started with the flies. On November 2011, Latoya Ammons, her mother, Rosa Campbell, and her three children... Them? What?
Nothing. I know where you're going with this story.
You've heard this?
No.
Oh, let's see. Then their ages 7, 9, and 12 moved into a house located at 3860 Carolina Street in Gary, Indiana.
Gary, Indiana. Gary,
yeah, that's exactly
Indiana,
what I thought. But their
yes,
room?
I've been in music.
Oh,
once.
And let me. This is their house.
Oh, so they lived in the projects.
It was. I'm guessing. Okay. Like a
low income.
A low income neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Their move was immediately marked with something sinister. Big black flies swarmed their screened-in porch in December.
Mm-mm.
Despite, of course, you could imagine in Indiana, it's freezing there. This is not normal. The grandmother, Rosa Campbell, remembers thinking, we killed them and killed them and killed them, but they kept coming back like a plague. Things
I don't like
just
this story.
Got stranger. Do what?
They were inside.
It said swarmed their screened-in porch is what it said.
So I know why he's telling the story. So sidetrack is I've had an infestation of flies in my house, and there's nothing in there. There's no food. There's the cat litter box, but I change that often. But I've had an infestation, and that's why he chose this story.
The story of Chris's flies.
Oh,
but no, it gets worse than that. So on top of that, every night after midnight, Campbell, the grandmother and the mother both said mm-hmm. that they would hear the steady clump of footsteps climbing the basement stairs and the creak of the door opening between the basement and the kitchen. Every time they examined it, nobody was there.
Nope.
Even after they locked the doors, the noise would continue. Then Campbell, the grandmother, said she awoke one night and saw a shadowy figure of a man pacing her living room. She leaped out of bed to investigate and found only large, wet boot prints. Boot prints.
Butt prints.
That's why I say foot prints.
He was like an animal scooting his butt across the carpet.
Butt prints. Then, on March 10th, 2012, the family's unease turned to pure fear.
Was it the Hat Man? Sleep paralysis?
You'll see.
Oh.
It was about 2 a.m., normally, the whole family would have been asleep, but they were mourning the death of a loved one
witching
with a group
hour.
Of friends. Do what?
Witching hour's close.
Yeah, the witching hour's close, and they're all awake mourning it. Ammons, one of the daughters was in their bedroom playing mm-hmm. and startled everyone by screaming. Campbell, the grandmother, ran into the bedroom
Mm-mm.
where the granddaughter, who was 12, and a friend were staying. But the 12-year-old daughter was levitating above the bed, completely unconscious. According to their account of the events, Ammons and several others all surrounded the girl. So throughout this, there are witnesses seeing all of this,
mm-hmm.
praying. And the grandmother remembers being terrified, and she thought, why is this happening to us? Eventually, the granddaughter descended onto the bed on her own, and she woke up with no memory of what had happened.
She blacked out.
Yep, and all the friends who were there visiting for the morning
mm-hmm.
Refused to return.
Yeah.
So my believer radar is going off. Was it the spirit of the person that died that entered her body?
You'll see. And then
I know that's why that's.
And from there, I wrote things got creepy as if they weren't, you know, creepy already. So then there's like a series of things that happen over the course of time. One of them, the mother once found the youngest boy, then seven, in a closet talking to another boy that nobody else could see.
No way.
And apparently the other boy was describing what it felt like to be murdered.
What?
Another time, that same seven-year-old was in the bathroom and he was thrown out of the bathroom into a wall. The 12-year-old would later tell mental health professionals that sometimes she felt as if she were being choked and held down so she couldn't speak or move.
Nope.
She said she heard a voice saying that she would never see her family again. And then the children's conversations with these beings actually increased over time. And more they would talk to invisible presences. Mm-hmm. They would speak in deep voices. Like the seven-year-old's like, hey, what's up? They would display evil smiles or giggles that their eyes would bulge out. So this is like all...
He sounds like Morgan Freeman, you know?
He's like narrating. Yeah. This is the lives of possessed children.
Naturally, and you can say like, this is actually all like really happening. These claims generated interest from authorities such as police and child services.
Mm-hmm.
Now, DCS family case manager Valerie Washington was asked to handle the initial investigation. And she gives the following account to police in her intake officer's report.
Uh-oh.
Get ready. Hospital personnel examined Ammons and her children and found them to be healthy and free of marks, bruises, or anything. A hospital
psychiatrist physical abuse
evaluated them and determined she was of sound mind, the mother. So surprisingly, they're like, yeah, this is definitely evidence of abuse of some kind. But then they go and they start interviewing and examining, and there's nothing at all that's suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Washington then interviewed the family in the hospital. Get ready for some shit. While she spoke with Ammons, the mother, the seven-year-old boy started growling with his teeth showing. His eyes rolled back into his head.
Ugh.
Suddenly, the boy locked his hands around his brother's throat and refused to let go until the adults pried his hands open. So then Washington and registered nurse Willie Lee Walker bring the two boys into a small exam room for an interview, and the grandmother, Campbell, joined them.
Mm-hmm.
The seven-year-old stared into his brother's eyes and began to growl again. "It's time to die," the boy said
what
in a deep, unnatural voice. "I will kill you." While the youngest boy spoke, the older brother then started headbutting his grandmother in the stomach. She grabbed her grandson's hand and started praying. What happened next would rattle the witness, and to some, it would offer a lot of evidence into paranormal activity. Now, according to Washington's original DCS report, and this is an account corroborated by Walker and the nurse, the older son had a weird grin, and he began to walk backwards up the wall to the ceiling.
What? Like Exorcist style?
Literally up the wall and is dangling from
the ceiling.
Oh
my God.
He then flipped over his grandmother, landing on his feet, but he never let go of her hand. And they have a nurse and a child protective service, a CPS officer.
A social worker.
Social worker, both reporting this claim.
This is insane.
Yeah. So Washington told police that she was so scared that, you know, she fled the room. Oh, I love this. She said, "We didn't know what was going on."
I was
so drunk. "We didn't know what was going on. That was crazy. I was like, everybody got to go." Everybody got to go.
Eventually, exorcists were brought in who claimed that there were around 200 demons stalking the location. And the spirits were only appeased when the Ammons moved from the cursed home and the exorcism was completed. Now, I wanted to talk more about the exorcism. There's so much more. Police got involved, and there was a policeman who was interviewed who was the skeptic, and he left there a believer, and he actually took a picture that supposedly had like spirits captured in it. But I'm out of time for this one. So if you want to know more, look up the Ammons family. Because their account,
yeah,
they're creepy and they're kooky. That's what I'm hearing.
This account is insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let me.
You know, I don't know.
I seem to think that either they exorcised it, but I did see a picture on whenever I was searching for images of the house like caved in. And so either it poltergeisted itself.
Or just fell to disrepair.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Or yeah.
Or there's something more logical if you want to believe in logic.
Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures bought it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, they have a documentary movie about it.
Demon House. I haven't seen it. It's on Amazon Prime. I haven't seen it yet. And I was just going to say this should be a movie. It is.
It is. This is.
I will watch it.
This is why we call ourselves armchair experts.
Because we only know some of the information and we leave out some of the details.
And then we get real lazy.
Oh, so let me bring it down a little bit.
Oh no. All right, what are you going to do?
So for my second story, I thought I would dive into something local from right here in Tucson, taking us back to 1977, just a couple weeks after I was born, in fact, which means Cody was like 30 at the time.
I knew it. There it is.
I'm talking about the strange and mysterious disappearance of Chuck Morgan. First slide. Charles Chuck Morgan was a 39-year-old head escrow agent for Statewide Escrow, which he owned here in Tucson. According to most, he lived a very unassuming life, living with his wife, Ruth, and their two daughters. Apparently, I didn't know this, in the 1970s, Arizona had become a sort of haven for money laundering due to a law that allowed anyone to buy land through a blind trust account.
Really?
Yep. These types of transactions allowed the mafia to launder large amounts of money without leaving any trace behind.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Since Chuck was an escrow agent, it was believed that he had access to identifying information in such cases. This shady-ass business resulted in gang members having an increase in the state of Arizona at that time as well. Chuck had made mentions to his wife about the money laundering that was occurring, but stated that he had no part in it. Although this may have been true, it was said that Chuck was supposedly working as a federal agent assisting in combating organized crime and working specifically for two alleged organized crime groups here in Tucson. Where else?
Where are we?
Being that it was a federal affair that was about as much information as he would or could provide to his family. Tuesday, March 22nd, 1977 started off as a day like any other for the Morgan family. Chuck left his home that morning along with his two daughters, who he was driving to school. What happened after that? No one knows. Chuck didn't show at work that day and later that night didn't come home following his normal working hours. As a result, his wife filed a missing persons report. The family was rightfully concerned and for 3 days were confused as to what may have happened. Here's where it gets weird.
I was about to say.
Well, on Friday, March 25th, at 1977 at 2 a.m., Chuck's wife, Ruth, was woken up by a loud banging at the back door. Hoping to get some closure with her husband's disappearance, she opened the back door. There, she was shocked and surprised to see Chuck.
Oh. Wait, how much time had passed?
3 days.
Okay.
According to her statement...
Oh, this is like the resurrection.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't even make that connection. Oh, which we'll make a connection later.
Okay.
Because I talk about the Bible. According to her statement, Chuck was quite disheveled, couldn't speak, and his hands were tied with plastic zip ties. Additionally, he had a plastic handcuff attached to his ankle. After Ruth gave Chuck a pen and paper to communicate, he wrote that he had been abducted and tortured and had escaped from his captors near Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport.
Holy shootsies!
Yeah. Additionally, he wrote that a hallucinogenic drug had been painted on his throat, preventing him from talking. He also wrote...
So wait, he wrote all of this? He's just like, 19 paragraphs later? Wow.
He also wrote that if he ingested the drug, he would go insane or his nervous system would cease to work, resulting in his death.
Whoa.
He then requested that his wife move his car. He wrote that he didn't want them to know he had returned. Not knowing who they were, Ruth tried to get Chuck to allow her to call the authorities, but Chuck refused, stating that if she did, she would, quote, sign the death warrant for the entire family, unquote.
Wow.
She tried to get further information from him, but he told her the less she knew, the less the likelihood there would be of anyone hurting her or their children.
He's just writing all this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Over the next week, Ruth would see that her husband got healthy and gained strength. Chuck then finally admitted to his secret identity as a secret federal agent for the Department of Treasury.
What?
This was the they he was referring to, stating that they had taken his Treasury identification. Like, wow. What kind of work does a secret agent of Department of Treasury do is what I'm wondering.
Right, and how far up, I almost said down, how far up does this go if he's that scared of anybody else knowing?
Yeah.
But if they were that good, mm-hmm. wouldn't they think, okay, they capture him and they're brilliant, whatever. Yeah. The logical place to check would be his house. Like, they didn't even check there?
Apparently not.
For days while he didn't look at him.
Yeah.
I'm not assuming. Okay.
The drug mm-hmm. wore off?
Apparently. I didn't get that information. So, yeah, she nursed him back to health.
Oh, that's true. And he learns to speak. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't understand why that is, but yeah.
This is so weird.
Following this incident, Chuck's paranoia increased, rightfully so. He was said to wear a bulletproof vest at all times. He demanded that only he be allowed to drive his daughters to and from school, going as far as informing the school that they were to leave with no one other than him. During this time, Chuck had informed his father about a letter he had written, then hidden in the case that anything were to occur to him. Fast forward to May of 1977. 2 months following Chuck's disappearance and reappearance, Ruth would find that Chuck had again disappeared.
Oh my gosh.
That morning, Ruth had taken their daughters to school while Chuck went to work with plans of attending a Masonic meeting following. On his way to work, Chuck had called his office saying he would arrive in 30 minutes. He would not arrive. This time around, Ruth again waited for his return to no avail.
Oh my God, poor Ruth.
9 days into his second disappearance, there was no sign of Chuck, but Ruth did receive a phone call from an unidentified woman who simply stated, "Chuck is all right." Ecclesiastes 12:1-8. For those unfamiliar with the Christian Bible, the passage states, quote, "Men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. Remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it." Yep.
Oh, are these clues? Let's Nancy Drew this.
Yep.
The silver cords must mean.
11 days following his second disappearance on Saturday, June 18th, 1977. I mistype. I put 2877. Way in the future. Chuck Morgan's body along with his car was found in Sales, Arizona, about 1 hour from Tucson. Chuck was found with a bullet wound in the back of his head. Autopsy reports stated that the bullet itself had come from Chuck's own gun, fired at close range, and had entered through his head, making its way to and settling between his teeth.
Ooh.
The gun was found near the body, devoid of all fingerprints, and as was the rest of the crime scene. Upon his death, Chuck was found still wearing his bulletproof vest with a knife concealed by his seatbelt. In his car were found various weapons as well as a supply of ammunition. Gunpowder was found on Chuck's left hand. He was right-handed. The car had been altered to unlock from the fender, and in the rear seat was found one of Chuck's teeth wrapped in a white handkerchief.
Ooh.
Additionally found were a piece of paper with the directions of the spot where Chuck had died, written in his own handwriting, a pair of sunglasses not belonging to Chuck, a $2 bill clipped inside his underwear. Second slide.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a weird slide. Oh, is this his underwear?
No.
Can't wait.
The bill.
Oh, there's weird stuff on it.
On the bill were written words, names, and drawings. Above the names was written Ecclesiastes 12 with arrows pointing to the numbers 1 and 8 with the bills within the bill's serial number.
Wow.
The same verses that Ruth was called with. On the backside of the bill, the signers of the Declaration of Independence were numbered 1-7, and a map roughly drawn represented the towns of Robles Junction and Sella City. Additionally, there were a number of last names written on the bill. Despite all this evidence, the authorities concluded that Chuck had taken his own life, although his wife and investigating journalist vehemently claimed that he had been murdered.
He got called by someone who actually quoted the verse that he wrote down on, but it's his suicide.
Do you want to know who she is?
Who?
Yes. 2 days following the gruesome discovery, a woman calling herself Green Eyes and claiming to be the same who had called Ruth called the authorities, stating that before his death, she had met Chuck at a motel where he showed her a briefcase with a large sum of money, which he intended to use to pay off the mafia. It was confirmed that Chuck had stayed at a local hotel 2 weeks prior to his death. Following the incident, Ruth's home was ransacked by two alleged FBI agents who would not say what they wanted and didn't appear to find whatever it was. An investigative journalist attempted to gain this information from the FBI, but was denied by the FBI, stating they didn't know who Charles Morgan was.
Oh my God, what the frick is this story?
It was found that Chuck had been heavily involved in money laundering in the early 70s, and at the time of his death was an involuntary witness for an inquest for the Arizona General Attorney's Office, as well as a key witness in a secret trade investigation regarding illegal border activity.
Wow.
On top of that, one of Chuck's daughters stated that her father knew a lot of secrets about important Tucson politicians. This case would be officially closed on August 10th, 1977. This case appeared on Unsolved Mysteries on February 7th, 1990, and not too long following the airing of this episode, two murders occurred that have been thought to be linked to Chuck Morgan's death.
Wow.
That being said, Chuck Morgan's death, along with the aforementioned murders, remain unsolved. Ruth Morgan herself died in 2006 without ever knowing the truth behind her husband's death and his secret life. We may also never know the full story leading to Chuck's untimely death. And that is the mysterious and bizarre case of the death of Charles Chuck Morgan.
Wow. Unbelievable.
What the? Hey, did anyone know this story? Yeah. This is right here in Tucson. How come we don't know your history? Just kidding. I don't know anything.
Now everybody's going to go look it up.
I know, right?
In the 70s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we were in college.
Yeah. So it was a huge story.
Last year, so yeah. Graduating and leaving.
Mhm. Interesting.
To the news.
Huge story.
Wow. Cuz I didn't know if it was a cover up or it was actually newsworthy or whatever.
Yeah. Oh no, it's been all over the news, so.
Damn. Chris, good story.
Thank you.
All right, we have one story left and then we go to Believer Skeptic.
Yeah.
And
then Creep of the Week.
And then Creep of the Week. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to lighten this up a little bit.
I know that was heavy, but I think it's an important, I always say this about when I do true crime, I always think it's important to hear victim stories because they deserve to have their voices heard.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, this is not actually that scary, but I think it was something to have just a little
more fun. Oh, this is the funny one.
Yeah. This is just a little more fun. I don't know about, well, I was going to say it's funny. I don't know about funny, but it's.
Do you have a slide fun. For it?
I do. And I'll, oh yeah. Here, watch this slide. I'm going to be talking about, haha, the Popobawa.
It sounds like a cryptid.
It is. And it's the Chupacabra of Zanzibar.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I was all over the world researching for this episode.
South Africa, yep. Zanzibar.
Beijing, Texas.
Yeah.
Hundreds of cultures worldwide.
Beijing, Texas.
Yes. Hundreds of cultures worldwide have legends of dangerous mythical demons, mm-hmm. You know, beings that locals swear exist, but which science has yet to conclusively document. The Chupacabra of Puerto Rico and Latin America, the Yeti, the Jersey Devil, all fall mm-hmm. into this category of creatures. You know, locals can blame them for all kinds
Yeti-ish.
Of crap.
Yeti-ish.
Yeah, right? In Tanzania, specifically on the islands of Zanzibar, the demon that haunts locals' dreams is the Popobawa or the Batwing.
The Batwing?
Yeah.
Just one wing?
Just one wing. The Batwing.
like one side?
Just one. a shapeshifter, the Popobawa, is said to take on both human and animal forms at will.
It's a shapeshifter.
It's evocative. It is. Yep. Oh. And it gets its evocative name, however, from the distinctive shadow cast by its outspread wings when it attacks. Believers say the creature is a djinn.
Oh.
Released by a sheik seeking vengeance.
Oh, nice. We did an episode, a full episode on nothing but djinn, and that was so fascinating.
It was awesome. And if people, that's actually genies, but there's like different versions, and they're grouped into djinn. Yeah, and it's really fascinating.
Yeah,
really
they have their own like caste system too within the djinn. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All yeah.
Essentially just zombies.
Yeah.
All the way up to like virtually
gods. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And this is a form of djinn. Now, according to believers, the Popobawa will creep into your room in the dark of night and attack you in your own bed. Sometimes a sulfurous smell accompanies the creature.
Rotten eggs.
It farts when it walks into the room. That's how it lets you know it's there.
Are they...
Yeah, eating too many eggs.
Are they succubus, incubus?
So here, let me show you a little picture.
Uh-oh, you're going to creep me out with them, aren't you? Oh, so, hell no.
Yeah, so this thing
no,
has
thank
one
you.
Eye and a bunch of teeth and...
He's a cyclops with bat wings.
And DSLs. According to... So this creature.
Yeah, look at those teeth.
Yeah. Okay. The teeth. The teeth negate the DSLs, but it creeps into your room in the dark of night and attacks you in your own bed. But a single attack isn't the end of the horror. Legend has it, if you don't tell others about the attack, the Popobawa will visit you again, staying longer and attacking more violently. So it's also particularly fond of attacking non-believers. So skeptics get it. I know. You've been like, better move. So it's a jerk.
So you better never go to Zanzibar.
I can't. I can't go because the Popobawa is going to attack me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why you should never go.
But it's like the most narcissistic demon out there because if you don't talk about it, you're screwed.
He gets upset.
Yeah, he gets upset. He's like, talk about me. I'm popular. Look at me. Look how hot I am.
Popular cryptid.
Popular cryptid. So the earliest recorded sighting occurred in 1965 on the island of Pemba.
Really?
Yeah, so it's actually fairly new.
Ish.
Now, the Popobawa allegedly spoke to a group of villagers on Pemba in 1971 through a girl possessed by the monster.
Wow.
The girl named Fatuma spoke in a deep man's voice, and then villagers say they heard the sound of a car revving and rustling on a nearby roof. That's two different things. When I first read it, I was like, what was the car doing on the roof? Yeah. But I was like, oh, no, that's the rustling happens over there.
Okay.
So this sounds like we've done like cryptids, you know, throughout. And this sounds fairly standard, except for the appearance, but also the fact that it wants you to talk about it.
It's like a cautionary tale or like a morality tale. Yeah.
And there's actually something on top of it, which I'll get into in Skeptic because it sounds standard. But there's a couple of things that set it apart. One, the Popobawa sexually assaults men.
Oh, so it
that
is a
one
succubi.
Of the things it's really known for. Yes. And so it only basically likes to do it with guys. Secondly, and okay, I have a second picture of it.
Is it dirty?
It's dirty. So
this is an adult podcast, so please.
I'll show it for 2 seconds because this is what they showed, and then I'll skip right by it. But then that's going to go, hold on, let me do this. Let me see if this works. There.
Oh!
There.
Okay. He has a carrot penis.
So, that's
he has a carrot for a penis.
That's what he uses to do
it's
things.
Like an opposite snowman. It is. A snowman standing on his head.
Okay. All right, that's fair. Okay, so, it sexually assaults men. Second, there are so many sightings of this thing.
Really?
There are so many sightings, and it's so widespread that it actually causes mass hysteria.
Yeah.
People are so scared that in times, entire villages will sleep outside.
So they'll actually gather together and sleep outside, huddled around a fire, so they can all be together and protect each other.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And safety. Yeah, safety in numbers.
Yeah, safety in numbers, exactly. So that's how people believe in this.
Yeah.
Men will often smear themselves with pig's oil, believing it repels attacks. And to me, I'm like, let's get this lube protect myself with it.
How do you oil?
Yeah, right? Like, look how tasty.
Like, how do you extract oil from a pig, pray tell?
You squeeze it. I don't know.
You just suck out some fat?
Oh, no. So there are actually lots of encounters, and people actually report encounters. Just a couple of them. Mohammed Juma starts to sweat and fidgets as he recalls his sexual assault by the Popobawa.
Oh, that's scary.
He said, "We believe reading the Quran is our only defense, nothing else.
That makes sense.
Popobawa is real and well prepared." I didn't actually let that sink in what that really means.
Oh, wow.
So, we heard a rustling on the
Speaking
roof.
Speaking of a horny flutist.
Yeah, I was like, tie into our Coco Pele. Let me turn this around so everyone knows. Coco Pele. "We heard a rustling on the roof," recalls Asa Saleh in his late 50s. He said, "I felt someone fondling me. I felt very cold. I felt weak," he said. "I couldn't call out for help to my spouse, who was lying in bed beside me," which is weird. Popobawa is very strong.
Wow.
"He presses down on you, and it took such a long time, 1 hour." So he's got some stamina. Also, finally, the sightings of Popobawa seem to happen in waves. Dozens or hundreds of individuals will report being attacked in a given year. Then the creature suddenly flies under the radar, essentially unheard of for several years, before appearing and attacking again.
It's like, reminds me of Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah.
You know how he only comes back to feed on them like every however many years
I'm
for the harvest?
Yeah, but yeah. I've never seen the movie. So
you don't want to
that.
Because of the director attached to it. But that's a whole different story.
Different thing.
Yeah.
And that is the story of the Popobawa.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So now in this segment of our show, we go into the believer skeptic portion.
Yep.
He will tell you why.
Well, do you want to go ahead and do believer first?
Sure.
Since I went last?
Or we'll do it before Creep of the Week, the second basket.
Yep.
So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Believer for me is certainly different since both my stories are unsolved mysteries. As for the Watcher, my theory is that it's a neighbor that has been in the community for a long time and either wants the perfect family to move in or wants to scare off buyers enough that the asking price will decrease until they can themselves afford to buy it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's what I'm going with.
Or if we want to get a little paranormal, perhaps it's one of those strange Stepford families, you know, and the Broaddus's were intentionally pushed out as they weren't a match, you know, kind of like the neighborhood in Edward Scissorhands where all the houses are the same, you know.
And all the cars and everything.
Yeah. Talk about an HOA from hell, you know.
Hell Owners Association.
Yeah. That being said, why would they go this route, you know? Like, there's easier ways than writing some ominous, crappy letters. So, regarding Chuck Morgan, like his family, I certainly don't believe that he took his own life and that he was definitely murdered. What I'm not sure about is that it was a hit from the mafia or from the government. To me, it seems like he was an accessory to both parties, you know?
Yeah.
Both parties potentially believing that he had betrayed them in some sense. In my humble opinion, Chuck Morgan is simply a victim of circumstance. With both cases remaining unsolved, there's a hope that one day we can get some answers.
Wow, nice.
Yeah. So what do you guys believe about either of those stories that I told?
The Watcher.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Watcher. The Watcher. Yeah.
Ooh.
So ominous. Yeah.
Yeah,
because
something that could be done nowadays with all of our, you know,
technology,
surveillance equipment and stuff you
could
do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you have to wonder if this is like a generational thing, if this Watcher has had another child who's going to be trained to be the Watcher for the next generation. Yeah.
Ooh. That curves me out. Yeah. Truly mentally ill. Yeah.
But very smart, and as an author, a pretty good writer, because
well,
that
if you're
is
writing
chilling.
like Elizabethan Shakespeare, it sounds very flowery.
That's
you know?
The thing is, it didn't have the raw like kind of like this person sounds educated,
yeah.
if you will, versus it's just someone.
Not like you will
die. Yes,
it's not magazine cutouts.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like something that's a little more like cerebral,
and it's so personal is what it makes it scary. Yeah.
Yeah.
They never found out. I don't think they've torn down the walls, you know.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
There was another story that I was originally going to do about finding things in the walls. There was a, not too long ago, I just read it in the news that there's a family, I don't know if it's in the Midwest, but they started to smell stuff and they opened up the walls and there's animal carcasses in there, you know, from old pagan rituals that the people have done.
Oh, there was a Popo Bawa in there.
Yeah.
That with smelling of eggs. Speaking of Popo Bawa, let's go to Skeptic.
Yes,
hey,
please.
Look at that. So I'm actually focusing on the Popo Bawa here. And the first thing that I actually, this was kind of my own, is that what I think was, this was kind of a tool used to kind of cover up your, like, so I can guess there that homosexuality would be very, very frowned upon in that area. Exactly.
Absolutely.
And so if you were ever caught, you could be murdered, killed, like at the very least ostracized really badly.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And so I could see something happening and someone being like, well, I see that you were with a man, and then being like, no, that was a Popo Bawa.
Yes.
Like that's what actually took advantage of me. And of course, because the town is or the area is so superstitious, they're like, pitchforks, let's go catch the Popo Bawa. And then the man and his boyfriend can continue to have dubers.
That's his code word for sex.
Yeah. And so that's what I actually was like, that's what I'm going to go with for Skeptic. That's why I think that people are using this. But then I found something really interesting. Some skeptics have tied the intervals. Remember how I said that the attacks come and go in waves? Have tied these intervals to the Zanzibari election cycle. Panics occur predictably and exclusively in years when the Zanzibari officials are up for election, then fade away.
It's like a weird version of the purge.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and they fade away until the next election, right? So the people concluded that opposition party members created and regularly revive the myth of the Popo Bawa as a political tool. Like so many savvy politicians before them, these officials, according to the show, are using fear to garner votes.
It's a threat. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't vote for me,
exactly. Yeah. Like you can see why it's coming is because you're not voting for like, and if you vote for my party, I promise you they'll go away.
That's weird.
Yeah. Or the incumbents do this to scare people away, and then only their loyal followers will vote, and yep. then most everybody else is too afraid to go bother to vote.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Oh yeah. Yeah. Smart.
All right.
Oh, I was like,
we have one more basket. So if you have, there's a number on your chair or the chair next to you.
Yep. Okay. So we're going 128.
Yay!
Hey!
You get the Phantom wine.
So it has, yeah, Phantom wine and shirt and some goodies in there for you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. You're so welcome.
Yeah, we have a shirt with our logo on it, so.
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely. So welcome. You're so welcome.
Thank you for being here. So,
all right.
So with that, uh-huh. our next segment we call Creep of the Week. And what we do for the Creep of the Week is we usually have either true stories that listeners send in or something that's relevant to the topic that's been current in the news. So, but today we have a special guest, from her own podcast, Paranormal Life with V. And...
look how awesome that is.
There she is, see? So she's going to go ahead and be our Creep of the Week here. And if you want to kind of introduce yourself and tell us about your podcast and then tell your story.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I've had so much fun hearing your story. Now it's like my turn. So my name is Vanessa Orvi. My podcast is called Life Paranormal with V. I started about a year ago. It's based upon my own experiences growing up. Experiencing a lot. So little quick background about myself, bio. I've been clairvoyant and medium since I was, when can I remember? Like 3 years old was like the most vivid, probably memory I can go back to when I started. But I've had a lot of like supernatural paranormal experiences with spirits. But, you know, you're talking about like the Addams family. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like how my family, you know, grew up. So, but also it's like we experience things, but then you don't talk about it, you know? Yeah. So we were like, you know what I mean?
Mexican American.
It's like cultural, you know, it's cultural. Yeah. Yes. So we don't tell anybody.
Mental illness.
Oh,
yes. Right. It's sad. Yeah. So, you know, we've had so many things happen and, you know, my show is really about speaking with people who've experienced these things. And it's not just paranormal, it's unexplained. So we talk about cryptids, we talk about people who've seen UFOs, and you know, it's just, for me, it's about the experience and what it's done to you, you know, emotionally. And it really is traumatic if you think about it, yeah. You know, even as a child.
I like the emotional aspect of that, being like, how did it make you feel, and yes. how did this affect your life?
You know,
everything?
And a lot of people, because we can sit here and tell stories, and I love it. I love everything about it. But it's like when you've lived it, especially if you've experienced things and you're too scared to talk about it.
Sure.
That's really sad. You know, yeah. You don't know that there's such a great community out there who will embrace you.
Right.
So I grew up like that. And just about, I'd say the past 3 years, I really came out talking about it more and talking with, you know, abductees, you know, and, it's really rewarding, I think, especially for me, because I started the podcast to really not only help me cope, but it's led me to some really great people, you know, yeah. It's just their stories is amazing and how they've overcome things. And we talk about how it's impacted them. A lot of people who come on the show, like the very first guest I have, Jack, he's from the UK. His experience with the Hat Man was really scary. Oh, yeah, really he had not talked about that since he like experienced it. And 3 months later, I kid you not, the worst paranormal activity has been happening to his family till this day. This happened like a year ago. Awful, awful stuff has happened to his family since then in their house.
Oh my gosh.
It caught on camera. There's stuff on YouTube. Like, I'll have to send you the link.
Yeah.
Chilling. And even on the podcast where he was my guest on the show, horrible, horribly scary EVP. Okay. At the end of it, you can hear, like, I'm saying bye to him, and then you can hear someone say, "Hi, Vanessa."
Ah, really?
Scary. In a man's voice. Yeah.
Hi, Vanessa.
But, so I know you wanted me to talk about some things. Yeah. Do you guys? I told you guys to pick, because I have so much.
Okay. What do you mean? Well, if we're doing... do you have anything that's kind of scary, that kind of freaked you out?
You know, okay.
Since we're doing horror.
Well, since we ended with a cryptid story, I want to talk about my cryptid story.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what they were called, I swear. I did not know that this was, you know... I didn't know about the world of cryptids or whatnot, just till like, you know, recently. Like I said, I've been like a hermit. Having, you know, coming out into this community has been great.
Oh, I'm so glad you did.
Yeah, I know, right? So this must have been like 15 years ago. My husband and I, we were dating at the time. It was late at night, and we're driving from the east side going down 22nd. It was probably around midnight. It was a pool party, so, you know, we weren't drinking. We were enjoying ourselves at the barbecue and everything, so we were sober.
Okay, yeah, that's important.
So it's not like we were, like, hallucinating. Like, okay, yeah. So he was driving. We were going home, and, you know, we have the music up. We're you know, just having a good time. And there's three lanes going down 22nd, you know. There's someone in the first and middle lane. We're in the third. And out of nowhere, we see what looks like this tall creature, okay? It's like silvery and complected, like almost silvery white, like albino kind of. Nosferatu teeth, okay? Long,
bat wing.
Not long nails, shrieking. It was screaming, and it ran across like so fast. And I know that the car in the middle saw it because it braked. And I saw the people turning, and I mean, I screamed. I screamed because I was like, what the?
Oh, that? Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as it ran across our car, it was so fast. No human could have ran that fast, you know? When I turned back and I looked, it was like kind of moving in a weird way. Do you remember the vampires from Blade?
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of that. But the way it was running away looked like it was ticking. Like, just the body, like, it was just...
That is so strange.
Strange. And I thought, when I first saw it, it was, like, wearing a tunic or something. But what I think I actually saw was, like, the underbelly of something. Like, it must have been, like, rolls. Or, I don't know, but it looked really weird. So, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Ashers from On Wednesdays We Talk Weird. Mm-hmm. She's, like, a cryptid expert, you know, Mothman expert. Okay. I was telling her about my experience. She's like, Vanessa, that sounds like a crawler.
Oh, like
I'm like, what the fuck?
Is it Sacramento crawlers?
I think, I don't know. Look it up. Look it up.
Here we come.
I've never been familiar with it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she showed me this video on YouTube, okay, of some kid. He was out in the, you know, I forget what area he was in, but it looked so much like it. And this thing rushes at him. And the way it was moving, the way it looked so similar to what Vic and I saw that night.
It's the Fresno Nightcrawler. Yeah.
Really? Oh, it gives me chills. That was really scary only because the way it was shrieking, the way it moved, it was so... You know when you do something bad when you're small and you're like, oh my God, my parents are going to find out. I shouldn't have done that. I was kind of like that. Oh, I shouldn't be here right now. It was like this feeling in my gut like I saw something wrong and I shouldn't have been there, you know?
Oh.
But it's like it made icon. I can't even tell you. It was like it's time slowed down in that moment. It was so scary.
Did it look anything like this?
No. That's the first okay. No, it's not that tall.
Okay, I've got
it. I know they're also known as like rakes or something, but I think the correct like.
That's what we're looking at is this thing. That's what she. That's what she saw.
That is crazy.
That is its great-great-grandfather. No, it's not that.
Yeah, that's insane.
Were there any other sightings of it that night? Did anyone else say anything? Like, I would want to go to the other car and be like...
I didn't stop that. Right? Not at the light, no. No, I didn't. I never saw, you know, I never thought to look that up. You know, at the time, we're just like, Vic thought, oh, it's just like someone really high on meth or something like that. Oh, no, but the teeth, the claws, the shrieking.
The speed.
It was
unnatural.
Yeah, supernatural. Yeah.
Super, supernatural.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was so scary.
Kind of like, you know, the lizards that they were used for dinosaur movies?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They really do jerk.
Yeah.
Really strange when you see them.
Oh, yeah, like the little, just like that.
Yes.
And when I saw the actual lizard, it's like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, V, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh, I have so much more. If you want to listen to my podcast.
Yeah, please do. Where can they find you? Oh, hold on.
Well, all streaming podcast platforms. So Apple, Spotify, anywhere you can basically find podcasts on there. So I have a Christmas episode coming up, I think. I'm not like these guys. I'm not like on every other week. I just go on like whenever I want to.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. But I have some, no, if you really want to catch up with, you know, my story here about my experiences, they're pretty terrifying, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I can't wait. Absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. Thank you, V.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, I think that is...
that is what we got.
That
right?
is everything. Yeah. So thank you for joining us tonight. This was the first for ToosCon, which was awesome. Thank you for inviting us, Joe. With that, if you want to find us, you can find us on all streaming platforms as well. BSPod PHX or BSP Believer Skeptic Podcast. If you have any stories, weird, scary, or otherwise, like V does, you can always send that to BSPodPHX@gmail.com.
Yeah. And that PHX is for Phoenix. That's yes. where we're. That's what we're from.
And
so.
Is that everything?
And so. Also,
oh, we have stickers and cards. If you want to take some,
yeah.
We also want to just shout out our network. We are part of the Podmoth Network.
Proud members of the Podmoth Network.
Yeah. So look up the Podmoth Network. There's a ton of podcasts on there that are weird and obscure, just like us.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So. And our normal episodes, this one we ran long because we had, you know, extra time, but usually they run about 45 minutes. So just so you know, like if you want a little escape on your drive to work or whatever, yeah, check us out. And then also I'm an author and my books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, as always plug them on our podcast, are available on Amazon. You can search my name and it's a trilogy which is out. I have the first two books right here. So that does it for us, right?
I believe so. I just want to thank you all for being here again, and as well just for ToosCon for having us. So.
Yeah. And with that, everyone,
bye.
My voice cracked.
See you again next time.